What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Rex Factor, where today we're not reviewing the consorts of England or indeed reviewing anybody. Instead, we are marking the very sad passing of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. We are recording this on Monday, the 12th of September 2022, and the Queen died last week on Thursday, the 8th of September. So, still very recent.
Yeah. Yeah, still very... God blimey, you know, what a shock.
Yeah. So her funeral is taking place in a week's time, as we record, so Monday the 19th. But what we wanted to do today was sort of reflect a bit on the Queen's death, or life, I suppose. And it's weird, because we're not a royal news-style podcast, but equally no. This is very much part of history, and the, you know, that story of the kings and queens of England that we've told is obviously the Queen is part of that.
It would be very odd if in 100 years... someone by chance stumbled across this and thought, oh, I wonder what they make. It would be odd if we hadn't have talked about a coronation, possibly the only time it's ever relevant to our podcast.
Yeah, because Elizabeth II was the final monarch that we featured in our original series, reviewing the kings and queens of England, some 9 years ago, 2013, that we reviewed Elizabeth II.
9 years, blimey. Gosh, yeah, okay. That's shocking. Wow, and even then we were impressed at the longevity.
Anyway, and Ali, how are you feeling about it all?
Confused, I guess, is therefore a good response.
And I guess because even though she's old, but and obviously 96 years old, she was a very old woman, but equally it did sort of feel like it came quite quickly in the end.
I wish it was fabulous. You know, She couldn't stand the indignity of being unwell, it seemed.
Yeah.
And I don't know, for me, you know, it's just, whatever anyone's opinion on it, it's never nice when someone dies who seemed like just a lovely old lady most of the time, but sort of regardless of the politics of it all. And actually, especially because of that, because she was such a constant, it never felt like, well, while she was there, at least, you know, I've said before about having like this maternal figure up there. Just everything's can't just, oh, don't worry. It's all steady, steady, steady. She was in the war. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And it feels like now she's gone, everything's up for grabs. Like this is the future now, being pushed out the nest or something.
Yeah.
It's all so bloody real. Sorry, the swear word. I suppose it's just Peter Pan. Any death makes me just think, I don't want to grow up.
Even though, obviously, lots of people are dying all the time, but somehow, whilst the Queen was still there, and obviously Philip for a long time, it was almost like, well, maybe we will all live forever. I know that some people are dying, but the Queen's still there throughout, constantly, not really changing, or not seeming to change, just carrying on, doing the business day in, day out.
Yeah.
And you just imagine that everything will, for all the change that there is going on, somehow everything will largely keep... sort of the same.
Exactly. And I was really close to my my grandmother, and I always sort of, when I was a kid, just totally presumed that they were mates,
because the queen and my
grandma, yeah. But she also drove an ambulance in the war, and they dressed the same. Short little old ladies about the same age, and I was really blue anyway, and it was the end of summer, and just woke up all those feelings of security disappearing and real world.
Yeah. Anyway, we originally covered Elizabeth II in our first series in 2013 across three episodes, two biography episodes and one to review her reign. For today, I wanted to do a recap of that and then to provide an update for the near decade that's passed since then and the major events of the Queen's life and reign. Particularly for you, as you've not been watching any of the coverage.
Honestly, I've completely blanked myself to it.
The most major news story relevant to the podcast that you've seen since the rediscovery of Richard III. So I thought I'd do a run through of what we did before, condensed, obviously, and then cover that bit at the end, and then some stats, some final stats.
To be honest, there you go. I've got no need for all of that stuff on the telly. If this is, you know, knowing this was coming up.
I just tell it to you. I filter out a few of your false memories, and then...
Then I'm back on an even keel. I tell you what, it's just to me, like when a new album comes along of a band that you like, you might not be in that space yet. I haven't fully approached the latest Radiohead album. Wasn't ready. I need some time, and then when I will, I'll do a deep dive. But it's too soon. Go on then, what have you got?
So, Elizabeth II was born on the 21st of April 1926, the daughter of George VI and Elizabeth Bowes Lyon. She was born during the reign of her grandfather, George V, in the same year as the general strike and the publication of Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, yeah.
Which her uncle, the future Edward VIII, bought for her as a present.
Oh, nice. So it's like the Gruffalo of our generation.
Yes, of the 20s, yeah. She was named Elizabeth after her mother, Alexandra after her great-grandmother, who was the consort of Edward VII, who died 6 months earlier, and Mary after her grandmother, Mary of Teck, who was the consort to George V. She was also the last future heir for whose birth the Home Secretary, who was then William Joynson Hicks, had to be in attendance.
That's an excellent Rex fact. Did you say that last time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I will not forget this.
Still... you get a double stamp.
George V, who'd been such a disciplinarian with his own children, delighted in Elizabeth, who was his first grandchild. So he called her Lilibet, because that was how she pronounced her name as a toddler, while she called him Grandpa England.
Yeah.
And when she was, he was unwell in his final years, so he would go on a sort of convalescence to Bognor Regis. Apparently the doctors would pretty much prescribe her presence as a tonic for him, because it cheered him up so much.
Nice.
To have her around. She wasn't expected to be queen when she was born, so her father was the second son of George V, so the younger brother of Edward, and it was assumed that Edward would obviously go on to be king and one day have his own children, so it wasn't ever assumed that Elizabeth was likely to become queen. So as such, her childhood was largely out of the limelight, so she had a happy time with her parents and younger sister Margaret. So we four, as George VI used to describe them, the family unit. Like her father, she was quite a shy and dutiful character, whereas her sister Margaret was rather more outgoing and cheeky. But their idyll was broken in 1936 with the death first of George V and then the abdication of her uncle Edward VIII when he wanted to marry the American divorcee Wallis Simpson, which resulted in her father becoming King George VI, which put an immense strain on him, and of course it made Elizabeth now next in line to the throne. And it all very much formed her sort of worldview, the importance of unwavering duty, and quite an aversion to the idea of divorce.
No sign of any boys then joining the two?
Apparently not. I guess they may have been happy enough with two, and I think it took them a few years to have Elizabeth, and then it was a few more years for Margaret, so perhaps children didn't come easily.
So just because even if a baby boy had been born, would have had a very young, even longer reigning.
During the Second World War, there was talk of sending Elizabeth and Margaret to Canada, but the King refused to countenance this. They lived mostly at Windsor. Elizabeth, of course, comes of age during the war, and it saw her transition into a working royal. So in 1940, she made her first broadcast, which was to the children of the Empire, i.e. the children of the British Empire who were having to go elsewhere, particularly going overseas for safety. In 1942, she was made Colonel of the Grenadier Guards, and in 1943, on her 16th birthday, she undertook her first solo engagement by inspecting them.
Hang on, she was a colonel before she was 16?
Yes.
It's good going, isn't it? Must be very good.
In 1945, she joined the army, training as a driver and mechanic in the Women's Auxiliary Territorial Service. So she passed her training, but the war ended before she had a chance to actually use her skills. Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? Mm. Peace broke out.
I just think it would, I mean, that would have been, I imagine, if you got the prospect of a gilded cage the rest of your life, the opportunity that a disruption that war represents. You can see why people thought it was a great, some people obviously thought it was a great time.
Well, yeah, so on VE Day, yes, she joined her parents and Winston Churchill acknowledging the crowds from the balcony of Buckingham Palace, but she was also allowed to go with her sister sort of incognito into the crowds over the next few nights to enjoy the revelry.
Wow.
Which was her sort of, I guess, her one moment out of the gilded cage, as you say. It was also during the war that she fell in love with a man who had become her husband, a consort, Prince Philip, the grandson of the King of Greece, though he was forced to flee into exile in 1921, or rather his family were. Philip was actually born on a dining room table mid-exiling.
Oh, right.
Philip, of course, grows up to be a very tall, athletic, charming, very handsome young man, and from Elizabeth's perspective, seems to have been the one pretty much from the off. So they get engaged at Balmoral in 1947, married in November, late in the year, apparently because George VI basically insists on having one last royal tour for we four before he loses Elizabeth to marriage. Britain was in the midst of austerity at the time of the royal wedding. Rationing was even stricter than it had been during the war, but nevertheless, wedding was greatly celebrated. Described by Churchill as a flash of colour on the hard road we have to travel.
Yeah, we've really got that to look forward to.
Mm.
Well, no, the coronation, I mean, not the wedding.
It was on that royal tour, when she was in South Africa, that Elizabeth made the speech that's been seen as very much as defining her life and queenship, where she pledged that her life, whether long or short, would be devoted to the service of her people. And the need to fulfil this pledge came rather sooner than she would have expected, because her father, worn down by the stresses of the war and also a lifetime smoking, which saw his entire left lung removed due to cancer.
When was that? So during the war?
After the war. It's after the
war.
But his health was increasingly bad, so Elizabeth stood in for him for a tour of Canada in 1951. And then in 1952, she was heading to a tour on his behalf to Australia and New Zealand, but she only got as far as Kenya when the news came through that her father, George VI, had died in his sleep on the night of the 6th of February 1952, making her queen just a couple of months before she turned 26.
Gosh, it's a big job.
So her coronation in 1953 was a major event. In sort of folklore, though, I think it's true, that it's the event that prompted swathes of the population to actually purchase a television for the very first time so that they could watch it.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
There was a lot of opposition to it actually being televised, so the Archbishop of Canterbury thought it would turn the sacred into spectacle, while Churchill feared it would destroy the solemnity of the occasion. But Philip had been put in charge of organising the coronation, and he was insistent that this needed to happen and they needed to modernise, so the Queen supported him. And
wasn't
Churchill
it done in 3D?
Yes, there was. It was actually. There was a 3D recording of it.
I mean, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
It comes and goes, but yeah, really.
It's always a fad, but it's been there for longer than you imagine.
Yeah.
It's thought that something like 20 million people watched it, which would be over half the adult population in Britain, with around 12 million listening to it on the radio. So they were a very glamorous couple in the 1950s. People were talking about the new Elizabethan age. Philip helped institute more modernising reforms, such as ending the debutante's coming out season, which is where sort of 18-year-old aristocratic girls would be presented to the world for marriage.
Oh, gosh.
They also inaugurate lunches in the gardens of Buckingham Palace for distinguished guests of all professions.
Nice.
Which became a major part of the reign.
I'd have loved to have gone to one of those, Tea with the Queen.
Particularly one of the early ones where you imagine that they probably hadn't thought through how many they were going to end up doing, so it maybe was a bit more like And she started doing televised Christmas speeches from 1957. They also undertook a huge tour of the Commonwealth from 1953 to 1954, in which Elizabeth became the first reigning monarch to visit Australia and New Zealand, as well as various other countries in that area. Something like three quarters of Australians and two thirds of New Zealanders came to see her.
Wow.
But the glamour soon faded and the Queen's popularity came into question. So Britain's place in the world came into question after the Suez Crisis in 1957. Pop culture of the swinging 60s saw Elizabeth look rather more old-fashioned and out of touch, whereas her younger sister, Princess Margaret, felt somewhat more of the time.
Mm.
Economic struggles and punk culture in the 70s saw widespread predictions of indifference to the Queen's Silver Jubilee in 1977. But in the event, it was actually a huge success, widely celebrated. Street parties were held all across the country. A million people lined the mall to watch her carriage ride to St. Paul's.
Mm.
She was also praised for her bravery at times. So in 1981, she was riding at the head of the sort of Trooping the Colour parade. And close range, somebody fired six shots at her. Transpired to be blank bullets, but obviously that wasn't known at the time. But she was praised for the way she just sort of kept her horse fairly steady and rode on without really making much fuss.
Why were they blanks?
I guess it was just for attention.
Right.
And maybe it's easier to get hold of blanks, perhaps, than actual bullets.
I'd never heard of this.
Yeah, you can watch it. There's a video of it. 1982, a disturbed man called Michael Fagan managed to just wander into her bedroom in Buckingham Palace and spoke to her for a while until she was able to extricate herself, but again, apparently very calmly.
Yeah, dealt with it by just having a chat with him.
Yeah.
Thought it was sensible.
The 80s started with plenty of optimism for the royal family, so the Queen's children were now coming to the fore. So the wedding of Prince Charles to Lady Diana Spencer in 1981 was a milestone event watched by some 750 million people worldwide.
It's a big thing. It's like Live Aid.
The great fairy tale wedding. Their sons, William and Harry, were born in 1982 and 1984. The Queen's second son, Prince Andrew, flew helicopters in the Falklands War in 1982, and his wedding to Sarah Ferguson in 1986 was another major public event.
It never had the shine of the big one, though, did it?
Not quite the same.
No.
But this was also the age of great press intrusion and family scandal. So all came to something of a head in 1992, with Princess Anne divorcing her first husband, Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson announcing their separation, and there was a major fire that caused extensive damage to Windsor Castle, followed by a public outcry when the government suggested that the public would fit the bill for the repairs, which ended up resulting in the Queen paying income tax for the first time.
Yeah, that was a bad year, as she called it.
Indeed, she described it as her annus horribilis.
Mm.
Most damaging to the royal family was the breakdown in the relationship between Prince Charles and Princess Diana. Their separation was announced by the Prime Minister, John Major, in December of 1992. And then the fallout was regularly in the news thereafter. So Diana published a book in that year as well. Charles admitted to having had an affair with Camilla Parker Bowles in 1994. Diana undertook a notorious interview with Martin Bashir on the BBC's Panorama in 1995. Although that one has subsequently been shown that he kind of got that interview through a certain amount of deception.
Yeah, I remember watching that with my grandmother in her sitting on the end of her bed for some reason.
Yeah. And the monarchy was at something of a low ebb, so the Queen reluctantly agreed to Charles and Diana divorcing in 1996, which, as you said, given everything that happened with her father and the abdication crisis, etc., took quite a lot for her to get to that point. It didn't end the media frenzy, of course, and it came to a tragic conclusion in 1997 when Diana was killed in a car crash in Paris, having been chased by the paparazzi. The huge outpouring of grief that followed took everyone by surprise. The Prime Minister, Tony Blair, famously described her in the aftermath as the people's princess, which very much captured the mood at the time, whereas the Queen deliberately stayed out of the glare of the media in Balmoral, where she was wanting to give Diana's sons, William and Harry, time to grieve outside of the glare of the public lens. But there was this growing sense that she was very much out of touch with the public mood. People wanted to see her being the Queen, being present in London. So it led to unprecedented criticism of the Queen, not just sort of amongst the general public, but actually in newspapers, basically demanding her to be in London, wanting to know why she wasn't there. So they did eventually return to London. It's quite a tense moment when the car's originally coming to the palace, and initially it's all very, very quiet. Mm. But then gradually an applause broke out and they went and met lots of the crowd. And then the Queen did an address to the nation later in the day where she praised Diana, and that seemed to stem the tide of criticism and move the public mood back to being a bit more pro-Queen.
God, that's so weird to have such a strong memory of that. And we're discussing it in a history podcast.
Mm. And at the funeral for Diana, the Queen bowed to the coffin, which is something that she would only ever previously do for the cenotaph on Remembrance Day.
Oh, right.
In the years after that, she suffered more big losses. Two of the closest members of her family, her younger sister, Princess Margaret, in 2001, and then the Queen Mother at 101 in 2002.
Mm. Mm.
That was also the year of her Golden Jubilee. So as with the Silver Jubilee, there were widespread predictions of it being a washout and nobody being interested. But once again, doubters were proved wrong. Widely celebrated, and it very much sort of set the tone for the rest of her reign in this sort of just general praise and people very much pro-Queen.
Mm.
Which never really let up for her, particularly thereafter. In 2011, she became the first British monarch to visit the Republic of Ireland.
That's impressive.
Visited sites of Irish nationalism and delivered a widely praised speech on the history of Anglo-Irish relations. I think was that the next year? I think as a result
with
of that...
Martin McGuinness?
Yeah, Martin McGuinness, Sinn Féin, she then shook hands with the following year because they had refused to meet her for the visit. They'd been against it, but I think it went sufficiently well that they then agreed it was time to...
Again, on a human level, not anything to do with the politics of the whole thing, but for her to do that when Mountbatten had been killed.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really sucking it up.
Mm. Yeah, it felt like a big moment.
Mm.
In 2012, she starred, as you were saying, in that James Bond video with Daniel Craig for the opening of the London Olympic Games, which she presided over. And that year was also, of course, the year of her Diamond Jubilee, which was the one that you went to with the river pageant of some 670 boats in the Thames as the main event. But, as you said, a bit of a literal washout, and it was very wet.
Which one was that then? The Diamond?
Diamond.
60. Is that 10 years ago? Yeah.
Fine.
I mean, the last 20 years have been good for her, apart from the last one.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Last four, maybe.
Three. Well, as I say, really, from that Golden Jubilee 2002, it's felt like those last 20 years have almost... It was funny, when I was coming to do the recent years, I was like, oh, God, not actually that much happened, to be honest. It all just feels...
And then they lived happy ever after. Yeah. Yeah, she'd completed the level by 2000.
Yeah.
And they'd put her out to pasture and all as well.
Hmm. So as we ended, you know, I said the future was looking bright. Charles and Camilla got married in 2005.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh. Wow.
So he's been married to Camilla longer than
Diana. A lot longer.
Yeah. William, the eldest son of Charles and Diana, married Kate Middleton in 2011, and their eldest son, Prince George, was born in July of 2013, which is the only time, other than the Victoria's reign, when there were three direct heirs alive at the same time as the reigning monarch, i.e. all of different generations.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, amazing.
So that was where we left it in 2013. That was the point. It was just a few months after the birth of Prince George. So what's happened after that? Well, as I say, in some ways, not a huge amount for a while. She continued to keep a pretty filled schedule, visits around the UK, though her foreign visits were curtailed. So she didn't leave Europe again after a visit to Australia in 2011.
Hmm.
And her last visit out of the country at all was to Malta in November 2015.
Hmm.
And on both occasions, those were for Commonwealth Heads of Government meetings.
Yeah.
In 2017, she became the first British monarch to commemorate a Sapphire Jubilee, which is 65 years, and also a Platinum Wedding Anniversary, 70 years.
Wow. She's smashing records all over the place.
She was. There were no major celebrations for the Sapphire Jubilee, but I think that was just out of choice rather than disinterest, because we just do the tens rather than the fives.
Yeah, it's like bringing World Cup every 2 years now, Alex.
Yeah. And her engagements are now a little lonelier because Prince Philip retired from official duties in August of 2017. But it's in a way, the last few years have been some of the most dramatic of her reigns. The COVID-19 pandemic that saw the country locked down in March 2020, Elizabeth moved to Windsor Castle, and there was a strict sort of sanitary protocol, which was called HMS Bubble, to keep her safe.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Clever. Was that before everyone else was bubbling, presumably? That was a rehearsed thing?
No, I think at the same time. I think that was what they...
Mm.
I mean, I guess it, in some ways, essentially the same as what everyone else is doing, but probably a bit stricter.
I see, yeah.
On April the 5th of 2020, she delivered an address to the nation, which was watched by about 24 million people, which again seemed to capture the public mood very well. So it ended with her saying, "Take comfort that while we may have more still to endure, better days will return. We will be with our friends again. We will be with our families again. We will meet again."
When that was broadcast, it was immediately, oh yeah, I've been present at a moment. And I got the feeling that a lot of the politicians were looking for that moment and didn't have it. And it was, right, boys, out the way. Here she is. Okay, phew, all right.
She delivered another address on the 8th of May to mark the 75th anniversary of VE Day. Made her first public engagement since COVID in October of 2020 and her first public appearance without a mask in November of that year for a private pilgrimage to the Tomb of the Unknown Warrior. Sadly, the following year, still amidst a lockdown situation, Prince Philip died on the 9th of April 2021, a couple of months shy of his 100th birthday.
Yeah.
That made Elizabeth the first British monarch to reign as a widow since Victoria.
Yeah, she took it better. But that's another parallel, isn't it, they've had there.
Yeah. But she said, sort of personally, to have described his death as leaving a huge void, as you can imagine, after 70 years of marriage. Of course, famously, COVID restrictions at the time meant that it was a very sparsely attended funeral, so you would have imagined that as a grand state occasion. But it's very much pared down, and she herself sat on her own wearing a mask for the funeral, which again was something which evoked a lot of sort of admiration and sympathy. And
yeah, she looked as lonely as she probably felt. Well, after 70 years, you wouldn't know where one starts and the other begins, stops and the other begins. Well, I've already taken your memories.
Yeah.
And you're my pod wife of 10 years.
Yeah.
11 years, whatever.
12 years.
There you go.
The last major royal controversy of her reign related to her second son, Prince Andrew, with allegations of child sexual abuse, which saw him removed from his various public offices and charitable roles, effectively being retired from public life. In February of this year, 2022, she became the first British monarch to reign for 70 years. But later that month, in February, she tested positive for COVID.
What?
So she had to cancel some of her virtual audiences, though she did still discuss with the Prime Minister the crisis that was ultimately leading to the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Wow. That completely passed me by.
She recovered to return to her duties, though her health was no longer as robust as it had been. So she was increasingly forced to cancel quite a lot of events, really. She was cancelling most of her events, it felt like, this year. So including missing the state opening of Parliament for only the third time in her reign, the previous two being when she was pregnant with Andrew and later Edward.
And this is all post-COVID?
All post-COVID, all this year. You wonder the extent to which, how much that took out of her.
Yeah.
Although they said that she had quite mild symptoms, but still at 96, it must be hard. And also, obviously, the fact, Prince Philip dying as well, you imagine that.
It definitely can't have helped.
She did open the new Elizabeth line, named in her honour, in London.
Oh, yeah.
It's a new train line. And she recorded a special video with Paddington Bear as part of the celebrations for her Platinum Jubilee.
Yeah. Haven't seen that yet.
It's sweet.
So she was there for the train opening?
Yeah, she did go. It was a bit of a surprise, actually. I think people assumed that that would be another thing she cancelled, but no, she was there for the train one.
Good. Good.
On the 6th of September, she appointed her 15th Prime Minister, Liz Truss, at Balmoral, which is the only time in her reign that she didn't receive a new Prime Minister at Buckingham Palace. See, Churchill was already Prime Minister. And then it was just 2 days later, on the 8th of September 2022, that she died at Balmoral Castle at the age of 96.
I mean, a class act. There's no faulting her. If you had to do that job, tick, you know, well done, job done. Even her death, you know, like a glove, well done.
Now, when we reviewed her in 2013, we decided not to make her eligible for the Rex Factor on account of the fact that she was still the Queen and it was all too current to be objective. A lot of people have asked us whether we would amend that now that her reign is complete, but I'd say that it's still too recent for us to do that and doesn't feel entirely appropriate given that she's only just died. So that's not something that we are going to be doing today. Likewise, we're not going to be doing a review episode of the new king, King Charles III, because again, bit too soon. He's not had a chance to do much reigning thus far.
Oh, a bit make for a short episode. I mean, we might as well just live stream the news.
Nor will we be changing the focus of our current series on the consorts, which will still be all the Queen and Prince consorts of England from Elswith to Prince Philip. However, we will need to make some adjustments to our original scoring when it comes to the Queen's longevity. She was Queen for 70 years, the only, obviously, monarch in British history to do that. When we first reviewed her in 2013, she'd been queen for just under 61 years, so she was the longest-lived monarch in British history. But in 2013, when we reviewed her, she had not reigned for as long as Queen Victoria.
Yeah.
So since we did that episode, she has surpassed Victoria, which happened in September 2015, meaning that she has the longest reign in British history.
And you were constantly going to have to change your...
The longevity score. I did have on my little spreadsheet for when we have like our combined scores and stuff. I did have a little calculating thing based on today's date. And
oh, well, that's so that nice. It would
keep going. Of course, sadly, now it's finished now. It is a finished number.
Did you do it? You set the end date when this had stopped calculating it and it's...
No.
That's it.
No. I just copied and pasted the value. Without needing the formula anymore.
That's a metaphor.
Yes, that's poignancy in Excel mode. So her longevity score when we did it before was 19.11. It is now, of course, 20 out of 20. So her score within the English series was 51.68. Though if you put her into our combined spreadsheet, which is English, Scottish, and half of the consorts, then she has a score of 60.
Where does that put her?
That puts her across the three series in joint 31st place, level with Grandpa England, George V.
Oh. I suppose he had a world war.
I mean, I don't think we didn't score her particularly highly for scandal.
Yeah.
And I think it was only, middling for battliness as well. But yeah, battliness and scandal weren't really her one, so she wasn't one of those who was going to get an all-time high score because she doesn't score highly in every factor.
But it's not about the score, it's about that certain something.
Now, her longevity record-breaking continued in the last decade of her reign, so she became the oldest living monarch in 2015 after the death of King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, and the longest-serving and still ruling head of state in 2016 following the death of King Bumibol Adulyadej of Thailand. In 2019, she became the longest reigning woman in history, surpassing Eleanor of Aquitaine's near 67 years ruling Aquitaine.
Good work.
A few months ago, she overtook King Bumibol Adulyadej of Thailand to become the second longest reigning monarch in history.
Oh, yeah. I knew it was second. Who's first then?
Well, so she fell just short in the end of becoming the longest reigning of all time. So that remains Louis XIV of France. So Elizabeth,
the Sun King.
Elizabeth ruled for 70 years and 214 days. Louis XIV 72 years and 110 days. So I think probably many of us would have expected she would have... It felt like she was so healthy that she was probably going to beat that.
It's Serena Williams, Margaret Court, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels like she deserves it, and yet not quite. So having listened back to the Queen's life and reign and hearing some of those stats, how are you feeling about it all? Any more thoughts?
I'm not upset by it. It's, I suppose I am. It's just...
Melancholy.
Yeah. Come on. 10 years ago, 2012, she was jumping out of a helicopter, for goodness sake.
Is it? Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Well, I mean, only 2 days early, she was appointing a new prime minister.
Yeah. Yeah. The generation-defining moments of COVID.
Yeah.
The same person who was there in... stayed in London during the Blitz was sort of rallying them again. What an incredible bridge.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's the disappearance of the Second World War bit for me, and I know how obsessed I am with it, and it's like another link to that gone. And
but it's true, though, isn't it? Particularly for the Queen, there is a sense that, you know, there aren't that many, you know, relatively speaking, from that generation now. It's, I think we've talked before, isn't it, like how when we were younger, the First World War generation... was dying
right,
of
a second,
it.
Yeah.
But it now feels weird that that's happening with the Second World War. And, you know, say the Queen was representative on that. You know, she was on that balcony with George VI, the Queen Mother, with Winston Churchill and her sister Margaret. You know, she was there. She was that link.
Yeah.
So it does feel like an era. Her era, but also the era that went before as well.
Also, most people, even those in power, never knew her as anything other than the Queen. And it's weird to have someone who's in ultimate charge, you know, legally, that you know all of the tabloid flaws of, and you have an opinion of that isn't set in stone from birth, that there's this nice old lady who just doesn't get involved, but, you know, that's it. So it becomes a bit more, like, grotty and real.
The poignancy of the moment for me was slightly lost because I've been following the news through the day, but then when the BBC News alert came through, literally just as I looked at it and saw it, my son Alex was walking around with a sheet over his head pretending to be a ghost, not connected, you know, wasn't in bad taste, and accidentally smashed me in the face with my partner's phone.
Oh no!
Which I was quite. Oh no no no! What, my face or the?
Well, I've got experience of both. Tell me which one broke.
Neither broke, but I was a bit cross. But on reflection afterwards, I thought it probably was an accident because he couldn't see anything, so you didn't really know where I was. But it was just literally just at that moment. That's what happened.
I was having a sort of idiotic eureka moment. I was driving through the country lanes and Radio 4 was on saying that the children had gone to the bedside. I thought, that's really bad, isn't it? She might already... And then as I was sort of the penny was dropping, then the news clanged through and sort of hastily, the BBC then sort of hastily deployed Operation, push the big red button or whatever it was. Yeah.
Operation Hugh Edwards.
Woomph, here we go. Yeah, yeah. Where's Hugh? And they're playing the. Then, as I pulled in outside home, they were playing. Sounds like a scene from EastEnders or something. They're playing the national anthem, so that it was still playing when I opened the van door. And some of the Jubilee bunting came fluttering down past me. Beck opened the door. Heard the national anthem, put two and two together and burst into tears. So I was like, and then Bonnie turned around and said, "Mummy's sad because of a life."
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
Did you ever have any close encounters with the Queen or meet her or see her?
I think Chelmsford. Yeah. Do you remember she came to Chelmsford not that long ago?
I do.
And she drove past. So, I mean, I had a close encounter as as one does as a pedestrian to literally thousands of people every day driving past. So not really. When I was in the choir, I was very ill with the measles. Is that right? Yeah, measles. When I first joined, and the rest of the choristers sang for the Queen.
Oh, nice.
But I didn't. Did for Princess Anne?
Right.
No, which one do I mean? No, Margaret, her sister. Yeah. That's it. So, no, only did... No. Did you see her when she came to Chelmsford?
Well, I was going to say that was my one close encounter, but I don't remember...
It was on...
You being there.
What's the one that I always think is called the Wheat Sheaf? By the police station?
Yeah.
Well, what was
the
police? That is the Wheat Sheaf.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, that makes sense. That road...
Mm.
The car procession went down that road and then turned off right down to Riverside. Is that where you were as well?
Well, I was slightly further up from there.
Huh.
But we didn't message that. Like, this was 2014. So, I mean, it was when we were doing Rackside. In fact, it was the year after we'd reviewed her.
Am I remembering your memory?
That's what I was going to say. Because I wrote a blog about it.
I'd have to ask Becca.
I'd be surprised if we were both there and
did you send me photos? Yeah, that would have been very, very weird.
I think you're remembering my story about when I saw the Queen.
What year was it?
2014.
I think I was in New Zealand, wasn't I?
Possibly.
In 2014.
Possibly, yeah. But you weren't in Chelmsford then, were you?
Did
you
no, either way, point? I was...
You weren't in Chelmsford. It was London or New Zealand. Yeah, I think this is my memory.
You know, I think you might be right.
So my experience, which may well be your experience that you've recalled from my telling you about it some years ago, was that they came to visit Chelmsford like for the 100th anniversary of the diocese. So the Royal Car was coming quite close to where I was working, but I was looking at the live site for the local newspaper online to figure out where she was, because I wanted to see her, but I didn't want to stand out for a certain amount of time.
No, but you hacked the mainframe, got the blueprints of the route, and slowed the lights, and you were there.
Yeah, stroke went onto Essex Live and waited for updates. And it turned out that the Essex Live updates were not quite as live as you needed them to be. So when I went out thinking, oh, I think she might be near now, everyone was starting to walk away in that manner that you don't when the Queen's about to arrive.
In exactly the opposite way.
Yes. You know. So I thought, oh no, I've missed it. But then she was going to the cathedral, so I thought, okay, well, I'll catch her on the way out. Mm-hmm. So I came out for lunch, thought I maybe missed her again, and everyone was kind of waiting near the top bit. But I saw the direction. I could see the Royal Car and stuff, and they were all facing going the other way. So I thought, well, she's not coming this way. So put my thinking cap on. Ran down, went sort of through some of those back routes.
Your royal thinking cap and royal running leggings.
So I then managed to come out a little bit further down the road, not as far as the Wheat Sheaf, a little bit past the cosmetic surgery place.
And sort of opposite the royal courts of the... Yeah, that's where I was. Yeah, that's right.
I don't know how you missed me, Chris.
This is your memory, isn't it?
Yeah. So I was there, and I thought, oh, this is good, because I was fairly near the front, and everyone in front of me was a lot shorter than me, so I thought, I'm going to get a good view of this. I'll have my camera, I'll hold it above my head, and I'll get a good picture as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So they came past, did see them in the car, and then looked at my photo, and I had a perfect focus of somebody who'd shoved their hands right up in front of me to take their own photo above their head. So no. I got blurred Queen blurred and Prince Queen. Philip. Very good focus on the back of this person's hand.
Or a purple car.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's 100% my memory. So, well, that's nice. You obviously described it to me in such detail. I've just absorbed it, so I'll have that one.
Yeah. I'll take that. Hard enough remembering my own things. This is a good story. I'll just keep that one.
It was more interesting than the day I had. I think, that'll do nicely.
Didn't you unless, go to one of the Jubilees?
Yes, I did. Yes, so I saw her going off down the Thames, floating downriver, and looked not too pleased about it.
It was raining, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was 86 in the rain, being made to stand on the deck. I mean, really? I definitely was at that one. I've got a picture of me at that.
Doubting everything there.
Yeah.
Well, something I've reflected on over the last few days was that, and some what we were talking about a little bit earlier about how sort of, you know, strange it feels and that sense that you kind of weirdly didn't imagine it would ever come. And it did remind me of our first series, but not of Elizabeth's episode, but of Queen Victoria, because that's a scenario.
Don't I mean, bring I know, me down, G-Man.
I know you want more Victoria. We've got some Dunstan talk later as well, obviously. No, but, you know, we've got this weird scenario where we have a queen that's been there for decades and decades and now is gone. Not many people can remember not being there. We're facing the prospect of a king again, which no one can remember. And it's very similar to that that Victorians faced when Victoria died in 1901. She'd ruled from 1837 to 1901, 63 years, which at the time was the longest reign in British history. Most people alive at the time couldn't remember a time before she was queen. Something has been noted in recent days. You were talking about how she's abridged this different era, and it's been pointed out that Elizabeth II's first prime minister, Winston Churchill, which is amazing in itself, really, he was born in 1874, so he was a Victorian.
My word.
Elizabeth II's last prime minister, Liz Truss, that she appointed just 2 days before she died, Liz Truss was born in 1975. So over 100 years after Churchill was born.
Oh, imagine the massive shift in cultural opinion, that the difference between the, well, hang on, I was going to say between the first and the last, but attitudes changing so much in that time from a Victorian to a, well, I mean, what generation would Liz Truss be? X?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose you'd say new Elizabethan.
The new Elizabethan, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But the Kaiser made this point, really, about Queen Victoria. So he was her eldest grandchild, as well as being Kaiser Wilhelm. And he observed, just think of it, she remembers George III, and now we're in the 20th century.
Mm. Yeah, so it's the same feelings.
Whilst the lives of her children has not always been without blemish, Elizabeth II's personal probity has never really been seriously questioned. And while we've got those rumours about Victoria and the relationship with John Brown, she's otherwise been, or otherwise was, the embodiment of Victorian middle-class family values. The Times noted the importance of Victoria's character, saying her own life was one of almost austere simplicity and homeliness. Her court has been unsullied by the vices which had come to be regarded as the inseparable concomitants of courts. Her whole life, public and private, has been a great and abiding lesson upon the paramount importance of character.
Could be like a horoscope where you read the same one out.
Yeah.
And it affects both people.
And it's hard to imagine life without them. So the Times, again, on Victoria. For nearly 64 years, she has watched at first with conscientious diffidence, later with ever-maturing experience, but always with a sympathetic insight of a sensitive yet finely balanced nature over every development of national policy and destiny.
Mm.
So yeah, that thing you were saying, like, she's been there all the way through. She's been that constant.
Yeah.
And the Daily Telegraph said, "Who can think of the nation and the race without her? How can our minds compass the meaning of what has happened? The golden reign is closed. The supreme woman of the world, best of the highest, greatest of the good, is gone. Never, never lost like this. All that we have known is different now. All is altered."
Yeah, everything's up for grabs now. Mm. You know, security blanket's gone.
And as you said as well, they're both handing over the throne to their sons. So after a long period of having a queen, we then move to a king. Charles has had the longest wait of any Prince of Wales to be king, and the previous longest was obviously Victoria's son, who became Edward VII. Neither prince were without controversy, and Victorians worried whether Edward VII would be able to live up to his mother's example and that same level of probity, etc. And the writer Thomas Hardy noted how strange, awkward and unreal it was now to sing God Save the King.
Mm. Yeah.
So as we said at the start, we're recording this on Monday the 12th of September. The plans for what happens next for Elizabeth II were recorded under the codename of Operation London.
Oh, that's a film.
So it's been in the pipeline for ages, what would happen, what they do when she dies.
Yeah.
Except that she died in Balmoral in Scotland, and there was actually a slightly altered plan for what to do if she dies in Scotland, which was under the code name of Operation Unicorn.
Unicorn, I see.
Because
nice.
Unicorn is the national animal of Scotland. Yes. Yeah,
obviously. Yeah. What was the first one? Operation?
London.
Yeah, that is a quality.
London Bridge, rather. It was London Bridge, wasn't it?
I imagine page one of the hand-typed dossier read, inform the local constabulary and get out your pager.
So in terms of what happens from Scotland, so earlier today, recordings on Monday the 12th, the Queen was brought to Edinburgh. King Charles escorted her coffin from Holyrood House to St Giles Cathedral, going along the Royal Mile. So she's lying in state at St Giles in Edinburgh. So she's in Edinburgh at the moment while we record. She'll be lying there with Scottish Royal Standard over the top and the Crown of Scotland.
Mm.
Now, the original plan in Operation Unicorn was that the Queen would be brought back to London in the Royal Train,
mm-hmm.
with the expectation that you probably have crowds forming all along the way at the major stations and all the bridges and all that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
But they've scrapped that plan.
Got rid of the train?
No, it's basically because they're expecting so many people are going to want to pay their respects and see her in Westminster when she lies in state in London, that they just needed to maximise the amount of time available to do that before the funeral.
Hmm.
So instead, she's flying back to London on Tuesday night, initially at Buckingham Palace, and then she'll be taken to Westminster Hall on Wednesday afternoon. And then for the next 4 days, people will be able to go in and walk past.
The Scots had it right, though, with the Royal Mile business. Why lie here in state? They should just say, this is the route, and we'll do it every day at lunchtime, whatever.
If we don't.
And drive.
Pop around, yeah.
Yeah, well, you see more people would see it.
Mm. Anyway, so on Sunday night in the UK at 8 o'clock p.m., there'll be a one-minute silence. And then on the morning of Monday, the 19th of September, she'll be taken in procession to Westminster Abbey for a state funeral, and then to Windsor, where she'll be buried. And then that will be that. The Queen will be laid to rest, and we will well and truly be in a new Carolean age with the reign of King Charles III and his Queen consort, Camilla.
Mm.
Lots of admin to do. For various institutions. The Royal Cipher, the E2R, is all over the place on government buildings. Yeah. Uniforms like police helmets, things like that you might not even think of. It just seems just the default badge, but actually it's all got to change because the E's need to become
C's. When they need a new one, get it done, but they don't need to go round.
Well, for some things, so post boxes, apparently they only change those when they...
Yeah,
change
it's too
them.
Wasteful.
So they don't take them all out or change the badges. But I think other things, let's say like uniforms and state papers and all that sort of stuff, they've got to change it all. The top lawyers are known as QC because that's Queen's Counsel, so they've now all got to become KC.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what I like is I know that it's going to be a great community of people out there somewhere who will know exactly where and when the first new Charles postbox will be. And they'll be there.
Yeah.
And I have to say, if I passed it, I'd be well chuffed.
Coinage as well, and the banknotes are all changed. And probably for the rest of the year, they'll still be issuing ones with Elizabeth on, because they need to do the portrait that will be used on the notes, and also the one that will be used on the coins. But then gradually, Charles will be introduced.
And it's the first time most people will have two monarchs on going round in
circulation.
Currency, in circulation.
According to tradition, Charles will, on the coins, will face in the opposite direction to Elizabeth, because apparently they always meant to alternate the direction they face in.
Is that just a thing? No reason why?
Yeah, just a thing.
No.
And of course, we were talking earlier, the national anthem already. That changes. Mm. Whenever that is sung now, it should be God Save the King. Not God Save the Queen.
Mm. It would just be, jarring, wouldn't it? It would be these little things that you...
Well, it was one of the first news alerts when it said about how the Queen had died, and then it said the King and the Queen Consort will be coming to London to do this, and or like doing it was almost like it's too soon. You can't say the King yet.
It's no cold in the ground.
Yeah,
you are lording it up.
But it happens immediately.
Kinging
it out. Mm. Yeah. But it happens immediately. So as soon as one monarch died, the next one exceeds. So Charles is the longest serving Prince of Wales in history and the oldest person to accede to the British throne, overtaking William IV, who was 64 when he became king in 1830.
Mm-hmm.
Sophia of Hanover was 83 when she died as heir to the British throne, and she died just a couple of months before Queen Anne, so narrowly missed out on being the oldest person.
Wow. Who was that?
So she was the mother of George I. So by the time of the Queen's funeral, Charles III will have been king for 11 days.
Mm.
He'll need another 30 to ensure that he doesn't have the shortest reign in English history. Sven Fulkeyrd has that on because he died in February 1014, 40 days after conquering England.
Yeah, he would. That would. I mean, the bureaucracy would just blow up if that happened. Mm.
Too much.
Yeah. Stick with the old Queen ones. They've got loads of those.
After that, we'll just have to wait and see what kind of king he will be. As Prince of Wales, he was noted for his environmental campaigning and charitable work for things like the Prince's Trust, but also controversial as a more interventionist figure whose opinions on various matters were known in a way which for the Queen wasn't. He's pledged that this is something that will end on his accession. He'll follow the mould of Elizabeth II as one who doesn't interfere. But we don't quite know. Will he struggle to continue her popularity? Will he be popular in his own way as maybe a slightly more eloquent and cultured figure? Have to wait and see.
To the next exciting episode of Rex Factor.
But for the final time for our Queen, Elizabeth II, that is it. We now have a king, the Queen. Although I'm interesting how long it'll be before people actually do start calling her Camilla, the Queen. Because at the moment, everyone's just saying the Queen Consort.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, given that really the news is all about the Queen and her funeral, etc.
Yeah. But I wonder. Yeah, that'd be a confusing headline otherwise.
But I wonder how long it will take after the funeral. How long will it be before people say the Queen and you can assume that they mean Camilla rather than Elizabeth?
Yeah, I wonder if it'll even happen at all.
Mm.
She'll always just be. Yeah, it will happen at some point, won't it?
Well, for us, that is it for Elizabeth II. We will be back to our normal service soon. So our next episode will be our interview with Nicola Tallis on Margaret Beaufort. But that was actually due to come out last Friday, but decided to pull that. Not because it was in any way inappropriate, but just felt like it would get lost. And I felt, it, like you were saying, it would feel a bit weird if we released a podcast the day after the Queen died that had absolutely no reference to that fact.
Yeah, that was very odd.
So, yeah, so we've paused all of that. So that will come out on the Friday, basically after the funeral next week. Then we've got a special episode coming out on the Great Fire of London, a messages and previews episode, and then we will be starting The Six Wives of Henry VIII, Catherine of Aragon. Until then, thank you for listening.
Cheerio.